Selling Tales with Ms. G, and as it is the week of Thanksgiving, I actually have stories based on Thanksgiving, but they're mysteries. So I'll give you a moment to get settled, and then I will be back with more Telling Tales here at 104.3 KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. I am bringing you Thanksgiving Stories, a short story that's also a mystery. It's called A Political Cornucopia by Deborah H. Goldstein. It was nearing Thanksgiving, 1969. America had put a man on the moon in July. Kennedy had been dead 6 years. Nixon was president. And for most of us, it was the age of Aquarius. For me, after graduating Alabama and spending months banging on doors in New York, I'd come back home and was covering the political beat for my dad's paper, the Wahoo Times. At 83, the incumbent mayor had decided not to run again. The two main contenders for the job were Sheriff Tom Eden and City Councilman Bob Foster. Ms. Sadie Mae Jones was also running, but as she had been on every election ballot for the past 20 years, the only ink the paper devoted to her was mentioning her name. Eden and Foster were different. They hated each other, and their followers respectfully had names like McCoy and Hatfield. Over the years, each had won his job the old-fashioned way, like kissing babies, eating barbecue, and buying votes. Buying votes in Wahoo County is a simple process. Someone, the candidate, trusts, parks a car about 20 yards from the voting station and pops his trunk. The trunk has a bag filled with singles, fives, tens, twenties, and a stack or two of rubber-banded hundreds in it. People come up to the car and negotiate how much it will take for them to vote for the candidate. Once a deal is struck, there's a handshake and a young guy, like me, walks the voter into the polling place. The agreed amount is handed over once the ballot is marked. I used to wonder why voters didn't shop between the open trunks, but I've learned that once a going rate is established, there isn't much wiggle room. Besides, it wouldn't be considered honorable. Honor is a big thing in Wahoo. Honor is why Sheriff Eden called a press conference in early October. He stood on the steps of Wahoo City Hall with his gun and holster prominently displayed against the expanse of his belly. With the microphone echoing his words, he talked to the gathered crowd. "This mayoral election is important to you, the people of Wahoo. You need to elect the man who can get the job done the way you want." Pausing to let the applause die down, his eye was caught by Ms. Sadie, who was standing at the edge of the crowd, twirling the parasol she used to protect her pale skin from the sun. He corrected himself to "person" before continuing. "That's why I'm announcing today that I will not tolerate anyone buying votes on my behalf. I'm running on my record." His hand glided over the top of his gun. "I challenge my opponent to do the same." Applauding, I did what most of the crowd did and looked over to see if Bob Foster was going to respond. Sure enough, he already was hoisting himself up the stairs. His immaculate white linen suit highlighted his equally white beard and bushy eyebrows. He paused on the steps only when he stood a head above the 6-foot sheriff.
Slowly, he leaned forward toward the microphone. Unlike some, I've never had to buy a vote in my life. So, not only will I not have anyone buying votes for me, I'll offer $1,000 if anyone catches me tampering with your right to vote. Of course, he said, tipping his fedora to the crowd, I'd be much obliged if you did cast your vote for me. His supporters roared. Sheriff Eden, not to be outdone, thrust his hand out as he stepped up even with Councilman Foster. He bent down, back down to the microphone, clasping Foster's hand as the two locked eyes, and said, same for me. Then, letting go of Foster's hand, he turned back to where Miss Sadie stood and, palm upward, extended his hand toward her. Sadie, will you join us in the pledge? Miss Sadie didn't miss a beat. Moving carefully, making sure not to hit anyone with her open parasol, she joined the two on the steps. I don't need a pledge to do what's right, but I'm glad you boys have seen the error of your ways. She ignored the matching glares Eden and Foster gave her. This is Thanksgiving season, and win or lose, we should, like our forefathers, give thanks for our bounty. I think the three of us should host a community Thanksgiving luncheon on Election Day to thank God for the favor bestowed upon all of us. She fluttered her hand toward the crowd. Sheriff Eden tried to argue that Thanksgiving wasn't for weeks and we shouldn't tamper with this official date, but Ms. Sadie had them over a barrel. By the time she explained that it wasn't until 1863 that President Lincoln proclaimed Thanksgiving to be held on the final Thursday of November, and that federal legislation didn't mandate the fourth Thursday celebration until 1941, everyone's eyes were glazed over. No one had the strength to argue with her when she said Wahoo needed its own day of thanks, plus the traditional one. The next morning, the Wahoo Times ran a picture of the three mayoral candidates hanging a wicker horn of plenty, overflowing with fruit and ears of grain, by the stage in the Baptist Church's social hall. Its caption read, A new day of celebration, turkey eating substituted for buying votes. My editor father had whittled my story about the agreement to not buy votes. The $1,000 pledge, the discussion about what to serve, and the candidates joining together to hang the cornucopia as a sign of the abundance of good in this election to a picture and a caption. If Dad had run my story, people would have known how the three agreed the luncheon needed to be in the church hall so people could eat and vote in one stop. Sheriff Eden had felt if it was at the church, the ladies' auxiliary could be coaxed into making pumpkin pies. Councilman Foster had argued it would be cheaper, especially if the community helped out, if the three of them embraced the first Thanksgiving's idea of fowl by serving chicken. But Sheriff Eden reminded him, everyone looks at it as being Turkey Day. Turkey. Ms. Sadie had poo-pooed their main course ideas, suggesting they embrace the historic tradition of lobster and vegetables. When the men challenged lobster, she started into another history lesson about how seafood rather than turkey was what the first celebrants had served. But Sheriff Eden interrupted her. Sadie, I'm allergic to shellfish, Sheriff Eden said. Besides, lobster would drive the cost of the election sky high. How? You can each use the money you would have used to buy votes. Not exactly, Sheriff Eden said. He looked over at Bob Foster, who was shaking his head slightly from side to side. That money's pretty much tied up, Councilman Foster explained. Ms. Sadie didn't question it further. Instead, she suggested they compromise by each bringing something different for the main dish. Election Day, the church hall was divided almost down the middle. One side had voting booths while the other had round tables set for lunch. Against the far wall, long tables were already piled with big bowls of salad, squash, and sweet potato casseroles, cranberry sauce, individually plated slices of pumpkin pie, and sweet tea. But there was still room to squeeze in the bounty from the courtyard. In the courtyard, three spits were slow cooking the plumpest turkeys I'd ever seen under the watchful eye of Sheriff Eden. Word was that a few of the county's finest had donated the birds. I couldn't see into the closed grills Councilman Foster and some of the other council members were tending, except when they'd opened them for a moment to baste their chickens with barbecue sauce. Ms. Sadie was making trips back and forth from her car using a kitchen tray to bring in her little casserole dishes. A number of times she was helped by some of the voters, who would carry a tray for her, wave hey as they went in to drop off the tray, and vote, and then come back outside to salivate at the smell the grills and spits were giving off. With kids playing on the jungle gym and swings, folks sipping tea and talking, and everyone eager to help bring in the main dishes, the churchyard just before lunch reminded me more of a trip to the circus than Election Day. But Election Day it was, and when the food was finally in and set up, and most of us had filled our plates, Sheriff Eden motioned Councilman Foster and Ms. Sadie to join him on the social hall stage. Figuring this might be my story, or that at least I could get a picture of the three standing under the ostentatious horn of plenty, I put my plate of turkey on the ledge behind the piano so I could get to it later. I want to thank you all for voting and for joining us in this Thanksgiving celebration today, Sheriff Eden began, holding up his plate so that everyone could see he had filled it with turkey, chicken, and Ms. Sadie's casserole. Ms. Sadie, I was the first to think this was a ridiculous idea, but it truly has brought Wahoo together in a time of thankful celebration. He recited a short prayer of thanks. When he finished, Ms. Sadie smiled. She took the plate and held it steady so I could get a picture of the three of them under the cornucopia, each holding a fork over the plate. But she didn't move to take the microphone like Bob Foster did. I don't know what really happened right after that. Sheriff Eden had just swallowed a piece of turkey, followed by a generous forkful of Ms. Say's casserole, and Councilman Foster was saying something about it being a fair and positive election when someone yelled out, "Fair? While you guys were cooking, she was buying votes left and right every time a tray of casseroles was carried in." Someone jumped the guy who was yelling because even if he was telling the truth, it wasn't an honorable thing to share with this crowd. A table went over, and the fight was in full force when Sheriff Eden grabbed his holster and pulled out his gun. I thought he was going to shoot into the crowd, but he began flaying it around as his free hand went to his throat, and he started gasping for air. He must not have had the safety on, because when he hit the floor, the gun went off. I heard a whoosh, and then a clank, as Commissioner Foster dropped the microphone when the overflowing wicker cornucopia dropped like lead onto his head. Dad ran my eyewitness story of how an abundance of lobster instead of turkey casserole, combined with a Thanksgiving-decorated cornucopia, killed two men and made Ms. Sadie mayor of Wahoo. The wire services picked it up, and wouldn't you know it, my first published story got nominated for a Pulitzer. That was A Political Cornucopia, a Thanksgiving mystery short story by Deborah H. Goldstein. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G, and I'll be right back with another one. Stay tuned. Thank you. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at 104.3 KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. I hope you enjoyed that last story. And so I have another one for you here right now. It's called The Purloined Pie by J.R. Lindermuth. "Didn't think you'd be open today," Benny Spinoza said, glancing around and seeing he had his choice of stools at the bar. Donovan, the owner, was the only other person in the place. "What? Why would I close when I know I got friends like you with nowhere else to go? You want a beer?" "Sure. Maybe you could fix me a sandwich, too." Donovan's eyebrows rose as he gazed at his friend. "You gonna spoil your dinner?" Spinoza shrugged. He was surprised Donovan had opened, since most of his trade had families and other places to be on a day like this. Spinoza wouldn't have stopped if he hadn't seen the lights as he drove by. "You're not having a Thanksgiving dinner." "Where would I have it? Like you said, I got nobody. Besides, like you, I'm working. Just because it's a holiday doesn't mean there aren't people going to need a cab." Donovan tapped a Yuengling and set the mug on the floor, on the bar. Spinoza straddled a stool and drew it closer. The legs of the stool made an irritating noise as they scraped the linoleum. "You gonna make that sandwich or what?" Donovan studied him a moment, then he grinned. "Tell you what," he said. Coming around from behind the bar and crossing to the door, he flipped the lock and turned toward Spinoza. "What?" Spinoza asked, scrunching up his face. "Why don't you bring that beer and come on upstairs?" Spinoza scowled. "Upstairs? To your apartment?" "Uh-huh. You're going to have dinner with us. Ain't going to be no tray down here anyways." Spinoza didn't argue, but his doubts were confirmed when he followed Donovan upstairs and Charmaine gave him a look that froze him in his tracks. Donovan's wife was on the sofa watching the Macy's parade. "What's he doing here?" she snapped in a voice as cold as winter wind. "I invited him to join us for dinner. We got plenty and he don't got no place else to go." He gestured to a chair opposite Charmaine. "Have a seat." Reluctantly, Spinoza folded his thin frame into the chair, shooting a cursory glance at Charmaine. She worked her lips and rolled her eyes for a moment, but didn't say any more for a while. Then, "You close up?" she asked her husband. "Yeah," he sat next to her on the sofa. "Don't seem like nobody else is coming around. If anyone gets desperate for a drink, they can ring the bell." Charmaine turned her attention back to their guest. "Didn't think your people celebrated Thanksgiving." "What, you think because I'm Jewish I don't like turkey?" "How the hell would I know? I'm a Catholic. Don't know nothing about your kind." "Everybody celebrates Thanksgiving, babe," Donovan told her. She shot him a look. "Just so's he don't go lighting up none of those stinky cigars he likes while he's in my house." "Don't worry," Spinoza said. "I won't. I'm trying to quit anyways." They sat in silence, Spinoza sipping his beer and having a look around the place while Donovan and Charmaine stared at the TV. Benny figured he was probably the only one of Donovan's customers who'd ever been invited up to the living quarters. If it weren't for Charmaine's attitude, he might have considered it an honor. "Everything's ready," a dulcet voice broke into his reverie. Kelly, Donovan's daughter, leaned in the doorway to what must be the dining room. If he was 20 years younger and a bit better looking, Spinoza thought he might have been inclined to ask Kelly out. She was the prettiest, nicest girl he'd ever met. Okay, so she wouldn't go out with a schmuck like him, even if he was 20 years younger and had a lot more money than he did. You can't blame a guy for dreaming. Anyway, he was glad she was the one doing the cooking and not her mother. Charmaine would probably lace his food with arsenic if she had her way. "Come on," Donovan said, waving him up from his seat. "How are you, Benny?" Kelly said, and she patted his shoulder as he walked by her. "Glad you could join us. There's plenty of food, so be sure and eat up." Her smile melted his hesitation. "I'll bring the rest of the food." Donovan took a seat at the head of the table where a platter with a golden brown turkey awaited carving. "Sit," he said to Spinoza, "anywhere you want." Charmaine flopped onto the chair at the other end of the table, which meant the place left for him would be opposite Kelly. "Can I help you, Kelly?" he asked, taking a step toward her. She graced him with another smile that made him blush. "Why, that's so nice of you, Benny." They bumped hips and elbows, entering the tiny kitchen, and Spinoza, while he experienced a reaction he hoped none of them would notice. "Just grab whatever you can and put it wherever there's room on the table," Kelly told him, hefting a large bowl of mashed and sweet potatoes. The pleasant odor of the food and the sweet scent of her swept over him as they passed in the close quarters. Spinoza grabbed a couple more bowls and followed her back to the dining room. "You don't have to work for your dinner," Donovan said, looking up from slicing the turkey. "He's a gentleman, Daddy," Kelly said, giving Spinoza another pat on the shoulder. "Not like some of the other lugs who come in downstairs." Their hips bumped again as they made another foray into the kitchen. Spinoza felt himself blushing and quickly turned away from Kelly. All the food transferred, they joined her parents at the table. Spinoza's gaze swept over the array of victuals, and he was amazed. His usual idea of a meal was a can of Campbell's soup or a corned beef sandwich. This was a feast in comparison. There was the turkey, half a ham glazed with pineapple, mashed potatoes and sweets, several varieties of vegetables, including a few he couldn't identify, cranberry sauce, and an array of other holiday treats. Spreading a napkin across his lap, Spinoza shook his head in wonder. "This is amazing," he said to Kelly. "I never seen so much food on one table, and it all looks so delicious. It must have taken you a week to do all this." It was Kelly's turn to blush. "Oh, it was nothing," she said, waving a hand and lowering her head. "I love cooking." "Kel does all our cooking now," Donovan said, pride in his voice. "She went to culinary school, you know. She wants to be a chef." "Really? I didn't know that." "It's not like she'd be advertising it to the likes of you," Charmaine snarled. "I hope you enjoy it," Kelly said, ignoring her mother. "Please, eat up before it gets cold." Spinoza took the suggestion as soon as he saw they were done with their Catholic ministrations. And he was right. Everything was delicious. He took a moment to compliment Kelly again. "My Grammy taught me to cook," she told him, her face going a pleasant rosy hue. "These are all her recipes." "Well, you've made good use of the training." He felt the heat of Charmaine's gaze upon him. "What? She don't even like somebody complimenting her daughter." "We lost Grammy last year, but I wish Poppy could be here," Kelly said. "They'd both be proud of you, honey," Donovan said. Charmaine snorted. "Only thing the old lady could do was cook. I'll grant her that. But your old man is a lush." "Mother!" Spinoza had no idea what this was about. He concentrated on cleaning his plate as a pall of silence fell over the room. He was so stuffed he didn't think he could eat another bite when Kelly finally broke the silence. "Anybody ready for dessert?" "I shouldn't," Donovan said. "But..." "There wasn't room in the fridge," Kelly said. "It's downstairs in the cooler." Donovan pushed back his chair and started to rise. "Let me get it," Spinoza said. "Nah, you're a guest." Spinoza tossed his napkin aside and stood. "Please, it's the least I can do after what you guys have done for me today. Besides, I'll need the exercise if I'm going to eat anything else." With no further protest, Spinoza went downstairs, passed behind the bar, and opened the big cooler. A pumpkin pie with whipped cream topping sat on the shelf. Spinoza smiled. "Hang around this girl long and I'll look like a blimp." "Where's the mincemeat?" Donovan asked as Spinoza sat the pumpkin pie on the table. "Huh? I didn't see no other pie." Kelly gave him a chagrined look. "I put them both in the cooler this morning." "Maybe you didn't see it." Spinoza shook his head. "There was nothing else but bar stuff." Kelly was headed for the stairs. "It's got to be there." Spinoza and Donovan followed in her wake. "Oh, Daddy," Kelly wailed as she peered in the cooler. "Somebody must have stole it." "But who? I locked the door when we came up." "There were some people in the bar when I brought the pies down this morning." "Do you remember who?" Spinoza asked. Donovan scratched his head, thinking. "Jimmy Steele, he was here, like he is every day for his morning pick-me-up. And, oh yeah, Rod, the refrigerator guy. Remember, Kel? We have been having problems with the little cooler. Rod was kind of miffed I called him out on a holiday." Kelly waved a hand in dismissal. "I don't see Rod as the kind who would steal a pie. Besides, I'm sure he'll add a stiff surcharge on his bill. Was there anyone else?" "What about Jimmy?" Spinoza asked. Donovan and Kelly both laughed. "If it ain't alcohol. Jimmy ain't interested, Donovan said. But isn't there some booze and minced meat? Not enough for a guy like Jimmy to notice. Kelly pondered. There was someone else when I came down. Over there, she said, pointing to a stool at the far end of the bar. Sparky, Donovan said, dipping his head in agreement. Sparky Cole? Benny asked. That old guy who's always bragging about his high school football days? He left before you came, Donovan said. Then, exchanging a quick glance with Kelly, he crossed to the door and turned the knob. Damn him, he grumbled as the door opened. But I saw you lock it before we went upstairs. Donovan nodded. Sparky was a locksmith. Spinoza gave him a puzzled look. He always seemed like an honest old guy to me. Why would he steal your pie? Kelly exchanged another look with her father. I think we know why. Benny, you have your cab, don't you? Care to go for a little ride?
Sure, just tell me.
Kelly turned to Donovan. Daddy? Donovan shook his head. Just let it go, Kel. No, Daddy. It's your fault, yours and Mom's. You should have made up with him long ago. The past is past. Live and forgive. He should have been here with us today. Are you coming? You know I can't, sweetie. Your mom would skin me alive. Well, I'm going. Benny?
Sure.
He opened the door for her and they went out to his cab. Spinoza turned the key in the ignition. He rubbed his hands together briskly. Brr, maybe we should have grabbed our coats.
It's not far. Turn your heater up. We'll survive.
Okay, just tell me where we're going. Kelly snapped on her seatbelt and gave him directions. I still don't understand why Sparky would steal your pie.
You'll see, Kelly said. Family feuds are a bitch.
She leaned back in the seat next to him, staring straight ahead. Puzzled, Spinoza drove. Kelly jumped out as soon as he pulled into the parking lot of the Comfort Retirement Home. By the time Spinoza switched off the engine and followed, she was already halfway up the stairs to the entrance of the brick facility.
Wait up, he called after her.
Come on. Does Sparky live here?
His best buddy does.
Kelly signed in at the reception desk and walked quickly down a hallway, paying no attention to a cluster of elderly men and women whose attention she'd drawn away from a blaring TV.
I'm glad you know where you're going, Spinoza complained, hurrying after her.
I sure don't. He nearly bumped into her as she drew up suddenly at the open door of one of the rooms.
Aha, Kelly said and darted into the room.
A white-haired man who looked vaguely familiar to Benny sat facing them in a rocking chair. Sparky Cole was in an armchair next to him. The remains of Kelly's pie sat on a coffee table between the two.
Hello, sweetie, the old man said to Kelly and gave her a toothy grin.
Kelly went over and gave him a hug.
Hello, Poppy, she said, straightening up. I see you enjoyed my pie.
Sure did. Your mincemeat has always been my favorite, he said with a wink.
Thanks for sending it over with Sparky.
Hands on her hips, Kelly smiled down at Sparky, who sank lower in his seat with a sheepish grin. Kelly's grandfather tilted to look past her at Spinoza standing in the doorway.
Who's this, darling? Your boyfriend?
Kelly grinned at Spinoza.
A friend, Poppy, Benny Spinoza, a good friend.
Spinoza, your old man, the cabbie?
He's retired now. I drive the hack.
You want some pie? Sparky asked. There's still some left.
No, thanks. We just came by to wish Poppy a happy Thanksgiving and see if you guys enjoyed the pie.
She knelt to give her grandfather a hug, then went over and hugged Sparky, too.
You're a good friend, Mr. Cole.
Placing a hand on her grandfather's shoulder, she added, Sorry you couldn't come for dinner today. I'll stop by to see you again over the weekend. As he walked back out the hall, Kelly brushed away tears from her eyes.
What's the beef between him and your parents? Spinoza asked.
Kelly made a sound, half between a laugh and a sob. Something that happened so long ago, none of them remember exactly what it was. But you know my mom, how she can hold a grudge. I hope one of these days Daddy will get the nerve to stand up to her on this. Poppy isn't getting any younger.
Well, at least he has you.
He threw an arm around Kelly's shoulders and was glad when she didn't object. They were nearly back to the bar before he built up the courage to blurt out, Kelly, I was wondering, that is, if you'd like to, do you think we could go out sometime? Kelly shifted a little closer on the seat and laid a hand on his arm.
I thought you'd never get around to asking.
That was The Purloined Pie, a Thanksgiving mystery short story by J.R. Lindermuth. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. Hope you enjoyed tonight's stories. And until next time, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Good night.